Hi, this is Roger Green, host of the Surfing the Mesh Tsunami podcast. This week, we are offering five conversations from episode 12, with Sven Franke and Will Alazawi joining Joran, Louise, and me to consider what failures have taught us about drug development, particularly if the success of the Resdiffra launch. Plus, from the vault, a conversation from last September about differences between how we would use NITs to evaluate patients for trials versus evaluate the efficacy of drugs in an individual patient. This conversation explores the key points from the paper that Sven Franke co-authored in 2023 with Alexander Krag and Mazen-Noureddin on lessons from recent clinical trial failures and the reasons they provided hope for the future. Sven starts by noting how different the world is now than when he co-authored this paper in 2023. Most notably, we now have an approved drug. He goes on to note three key issues the paper discussed that are still relevant: regression of fibrosis as a high bar for efficacy, inability to optimize heterogeneous patient samples, and how the complexity of physiology leaves some attractive modes of action insufficiently efficacious the way we do trials now. Joran Schottenberg continues with the issue of regressing fibrosis versus simply stopping progression. He notes that if the challenge is to stop progression, the researcher needs to manage the trial and control groups. If the control group has disease that is too stable, the test group will likely fail to differentiate. But if the test group is progressing too rapidly, it might not perform well enough. Sten agrees both on the opportunity and the challenges if patients' disease is too active. As the conversation ends, Will Alazawi uses the metaphor of the hamburger to describe how finely balanced this kind of patient recruitment and assignment must be. Having an approved drug changes lots of things for the better, but not everything. This conversation considers some of the issues we've yet to resolve. So just sit back, listen, enjoy, learn. When you're done, join the dialogue in our LinkedIn discussion group. So with that, let's get started. This episode really comes out of two features. One is who the guests are today. And second, and more striking, five or six times in the last 2 weeks, I've heard a question from investors or observers, never hepatologists, about, well, gee, we're reporting all these clinical trial results now, but given the history, how many of those are ever going to come through? So I said, beats me. You know, my last natural science course was high school biology, as I tell people from time to time. But we're fortunate to have with us people who were significant authors on two of the best graveyard of NASH drug papers I've seen yet, one that Joran participated in 2020 and one that Sven co-authored in 2023. So I thought what we would do was start by asking Sven to run through the state of the graveyard in 2023 and some of the things that he and Mazen-Noureddin and Alexander Krag done when they did their paper. And we'll ask questions and then have Joran comment in the context of what we knew in 2020. And then I've got a couple of questions about what all that means going forward. With that, Sven, my friend, the floor is yours.
Sven Frank.
Of course, meanwhile, the situation has changed quite substantially.
Yeah, we have a drug now, right?
Because we achieved the FDA approval for the first drug, which is really a milestone, I think. The paper we wrote was on the occasion of the reports of the Falcon trials of pegbelfermin, which did not hit the endpoints, although as for many other drugs, you had some signals of efficacy also there. So we reflected on that in that paper, trying to just give an idea about what the problems are with all those failed trials that we have seen so far. The main points were, first of all, you have the definition of the endpoints. There's a lot of discussion about histology as such, although I think that is not the main problem because biopsies are read before and after the intervention in the same way. So that's not really the issue because we discuss a lot about inter-observer variability, which is real. But we know from a different analysis now that if biopsies before and after are consistently analyzed in the same way, it's just about difference before and after. So that effect of inter-observer variability disappears there. And even if you have machine learning approaches, you end up with virtually the same results. So it's not the biopsy as such. It's more the endpoints that have been defined based on the biopsy that play an important role because they are high barrier endpoints. If you want regression of fibrosis in a score that just goes from 0 to 4 and we focus on F2, F3, that's putting the bar high. If you look at many of the trials and you incorporate into the efficacy in terms of fibrosis, not just the ones that regress fibrosis, but also the ones that do not progress, so the prevention of progression, which is clinically probably very relevant because if they do not evolve to F3 or F4, they are not likely to have liver-related events because in earlier stages, their clinical events on the long run are not so much liver-related. For DF3 and for sure DF4, then it's liver-related events that is important in their outcomes. But in earlier fibrosis stages, it's not those endpoints. It's cardiovascular endpoints mainly and non-hepatic cancers that play a role. So putting really a prerequisite that fibrosis regresses is putting the bar high, and probably those that do not progress are already having a clinically meaningful benefit on the long run. Still to be proven, but that's probably one of the main reasons why many trials fail, because we have put the bar too high. The other aspect is, of course, what this has to do with patient heterogeneity, differences in response. One of the problems with these trials has always been because we have to recruit based on the liver biopsy, which is not always very acceptable to patients. We had sometimes very broad inclusion criteria in terms of all the cardiometabolic comorbidities of the disease. We allow HbA1c's up to 8.5 or 9%. There's always the prerequisite, of course, that they had an attempt of lifestyle modification, but still we enter a lot of patients into a trial that are not optimized for all the cardiometabolic comorbidities that this disease associates with. And then because of that, you will end up with a lot of placebo effects. High placebo effect rate is one of the problems we are encountering in those trials. And you also include patients in those trials that are very heterogeneous in that respect. So the heterogeneity of the patient population is another important factor, and the fact that they are not optimized from a cardiometabolic point of view. And there are two very important reasons, I think, why a lot of potentially efficacious molecules did not hit the endpoints in those clinical trials. Another point is, of course, that it might be that some of the drugs are not efficacious. This is a very complex disease in terms of pathophysiology. We should realize that a lot of this is driven by what happens outside the liver and subsequently has an effect on the liver. And then the second player, of course, is the liver itself and the way the liver is equipped to cope with all the damaging and stressing factors. And so there is for sure an intrahepatic factor in the disease pathophysiology, but a lot is also driven by what happens outside. And if you have drugs that do not tackle both aspects, both the drivers of the disease extrahepatically and also all the mechanisms intrahepatically, probably some of these drugs might have some benefit but are a little bit too weak to hit those endpoints. So if you have drugs that are not very potent because of the complexity of the pathophysiology and they are just a little bit too narrow in the whole spectrum of mechanisms on the one hand, and you put the bar very high on the other hand, then by definition, the risk of failure is more elevated. And probably we have missed some of the drugs that might have had some benefit, probably not for all the patients, for at least a subgroup of patients.
So, Jörn, I see you nodding.
Jörn Schattenberg.
Sven raised a number of highly important points. And if you go through them one by one, the one you started out with, Sven, was that from a clinician's perspective, maybe the endpoint of regressing fibrosis is too high and we want to prevent the progression. And this could be an endpoint for a drug too. So stabilizing the patient. Clinically speaking, that's absolutely relevant. I can see how it's difficult in the regulatory context because we struggle to define a group that actually under placebo shows that relevant progression. You then need to select patients that actually do progress to show a stabilization, because if you select a placebo group that has a lot of early cases or not so severe, you might not see that progression in the placebo group. And I think that's critical, and it's very crucial to think about that when you start your trial and actually plan on the inclusion, exclusion, pre-screening criteria. So this is where this stands and falls, I think.
Yeah, I think it's a very important point, Jörn. And I think therefore it's important that probably one of the things in the inclusion criteria, it's not just what I said about all those cardiometabolic comorbidities that are not always optimized. It's probably also that we are not always including the right patients for a pharmacological treatment, because this disease is driven by the activity of the disease, of course, translating into fibrosis for sure, but the driver is the activity of the disease. And with the way we define it, and also in terms of having recruitment feasible, sometimes we did not include patients with very active disease, because the more active the disease is, first of all, there is more fibrosis, but there is also more fibrosis progression. And probably we included patients with too low degree of activity severity of the disease, which has also been shown, by the way, that if you make sub-analysis more focusing on patients with the most active disease, sometimes you get better results, more clear results, and a more clear separation between placebo groups and active treatment.
It, of course, hampers your recruitment because you're more stringent, and that brings you down again on conducting a realistic trial in a good time frame. It's a two-sided sword.
Yeah, absolutely.
William Elazawi.
The other element, of course, is that if you do select for the more active, we already know that it's pretty difficult to find people who've got the right level of fibrosis and the right level of activity in all the little boxes. And therefore, it becomes a more rarefied group in whom this study is being conducted. And that brings us on to probably falls just outside the remit of today's conversation, but actually applicability once the drug is licensed. It is exactly as you say, you've got to squeeze, it's like that old analogy, isn't it, with a hamburger. You want to hold it tight enough so it doesn't fall over you. So you want to squeeze so you get the right population, but not so hard that it all falls down over your clean shirt. And then you end up with a group of patients who actually don't really represent the population in whom you might try, might use the medicine. Mm-hmm. I have to say, it's a really elegantly written editorial, and I think unsurprisingly given the authors.
And now, back to Roger.
We hope you've enjoyed this recording. If you have any questions or comments about the content of this conversation or the entire episode, please put them in the review section of the page from which you downloaded this conversation, or send an email to questions@surfingmash.com. Next week, we will preview Global Fatty Liver Day from the Global Liver Institute, which will fall on June 13th. We'll have several patient advocates and at least one physician champion with us. Until then, stay safe, surf on, say a prayer for our departed colleague, Stephen, and his family, and we'll see you next week on the podcast. Bye-bye now.